Today on the 21st Show, we continue our series of conversations on the last year in Israel, Gaza, and beyond. This time we'll be hearing from Palestinian Illinoisans, including one who's done medical relief work in Gaza. We'll talk about coping with tragedy, working to make their voices heard, and seeking hope for the future. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WCBU in Peoria, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The latest chapter in the long war between Israel and Hamas has been raging for more than a year now. It began on October 7th last year, with Hamas launching an attack on Israel that killed 1,200 people and had hundreds more taken hostage. The Israeli government responded with airstrikes and a ground war in Gaza with the stated intent of dismantling Hamas. Palestinian authorities, though, say those attacks have killed more than 42,000 people, a figure that includes both Hamas fighters and also many, many civilians. Beyond the dead and wounded, starvation is a persistent threat. And safety can be hard to find. Just last night, the UN and local health officials said dozens of people were killed or injured after the Israeli military attacked a hospital complex, where it says members of Hamas were hiding. Today we continue our series of conversations with people who have been touched by these events. Last week we heard from a pair of Israeli students at the U of I. Today, Palestinian Illinoisans. State Representative Abdel Nasser Rashid is a Democrat from Justice, Illinois. He's the first Palestinian-American elected to the Illinois General Assembly. Representative Rashid, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Dr. Ash Aldada of Champaign-Urbana is also with us today. He's an interventional cardiologist. Dr. Aldada, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Dr. Thayer Ahmad is based in Chicago. He's an emergency medicine specialist who earlier this year spent 3 weeks volunteering at a hospital in the Gaza Strip. That hospital, by the way, is no longer functioning. Dr. Ahmad, welcome to you as well.
Appreciate it.
I want to begin just by checking in on how you're all thinking about this 1 year into this latest chapter. And Representative Rashid, I want to begin with you. We spoke last October. Take me back there, what you remember feeling those first days after this latest phase in the war started and where you are today.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. You know, over the last year we've seen, tens of thousands of Palestinians come under, be killed by Israeli airstrikes, and hundreds of thousands facing the threat of starvation, overwhelming majority of Gaza's population, homeless and susceptible to infectious disease and so many more horrors. As I've reflected over the last year, I know that this did not begin on October 7. More than 5,000 Palestinians were killed by Israel between 2008 and 2023 before October 7, and more than 5,000 Palestinians in Gaza in particular. In fact, in the West Bank alone, before October 7 in 2023, over 300 Palestinians were killed by Israel. And unless we address the fundamental inequities and the human rights violations, the apartheid system that Israel has instituted, an apartheid, don't take my word for it, take the word of Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. Until we address these fundamental human rights violations that are being financed by the United States government, we are going to see neither Palestinians nor Israelis find peace or safety. And so that's, today, I'd be remiss not to mentioned that what is happening as we speak is some of the most horrific violence that we've seen over the last year. Northern Gaza has been absolutely devastated. The Jabalia refugee camp was issued evacuation orders and people were killed as they were evacuating, not that they have anywhere to evacuate to. So this isn't something only that we've been witnessing over the last year. It's happening right now. Some of the most horrific scenes and violence in this genocide are continuing today.
Dr. Ahmad, you were in Gaza in January. Take us back. What did you see? What did you experience?
You know, I had been to Gaza multiple times prior to, you know, this most recent assault, and it was totally unrecognizable. And I went to Nasser Hospital, which is the second largest hospital in Gaza, the largest being Shifa in the north, and Nasser is the largest in the south. And it was, you know, it was unimaginable what we were witnessing as we were driving through the border from Egypt. I mean, it was an apocalyptic scene, absolutely terrifying to see tens of thousands of people living out of makeshift tents, living on top of each other. And we get to the hospital, and that's where we have to stay. I mean, we're sleeping in this hospital, and it is overwhelmed with people. Yeah, we're talking about just trying to walk down the corridor, and there are people sheltering in the hospital in the hallway. This is where they've been for months at that time. We are walking into the emergency department, into the resuscitation area where you bring in the most critically injured, and you are seeing people on the floor being treated because there are no more hospital carts. You see the floor is full of blood, and there are supplies that are being reused on different patients. You're seeing that the water is running out. I remember my very first day, I walk in and there is a young man on the floor and the team is working on him. And it's quite clear he's really sick. And, you know, they're trying as best as they can to save him. There was a home that had been bombed and the shrapnel had flown everywhere as it does. It flies indiscriminately. And he was in the street when this home had been bombed and shrapnel just pierced through his body. And, you know, they're doing what they can, and ultimately he doesn't survive this, and he's killed as a result of this bombing. And I remember looking up and realizing that his family was there in the hospital right next to him, just staring down at us, trying to, you know, help save their son. And it was, to me, really overwhelming at that point, that this is what life is like in Gaza. The average family has had to move from place to place 5, 6, 7 times, literally running away from the bombings. And every single person in Gaza has lost a loved one. And on top of that, there's this deliberate effort to sort of deprive Palestinians of, you know, basic dignity. And, you know, I just remember that family having to pick up their son off of the hospital floor with no one being able to help them and to find a place somewhere for him to be buried. And then trying to mark that area where he was buried so they remember where they can go and visit him and pay their respects. And then they had to go and figure out where they were going to be sheltering, where they would be getting food for the day. It was just devastating. I mean, all aspects of life came under attack. In this hospital, I saw kids who were missing school. Over 600,000 kids in Gaza have not gone to school since October 7th. We're talking about an entire generation of children who've been affected by this. We saw thousands of kids in the hospital who had lost one or more limbs, and there was no rehabilitation services. There are no prosthetics. There were barely any crutches, pediatric crutches, to give them so they can move around. They're just sort of dragging themselves on the floor to get to place to place. We saw women who were pregnant have no real prenatal care and have to have that anxiety every single day about wondering if they were going to be able to deliver their baby safely. And then if they delivered their baby safely, would they be able to have access to formula? Because that was totally cut off at that time. And, you know, I can go on and on, but I just would encourage viewers to think about, or listeners to think about, everyday life, what you do when you get up in the morning, you take a shower, you drive to work, you maybe fill up gas in your car, you go to the grocery store. All of that all of that came under attack in Gaza in a literal sense. Everything from it being deprived entry to being bombed by 2,000-pound bombs from fighter jets to drone strikes to water being cut off to the infrastructure that's actually there to allow you to live your life being leveled neighborhood by neighborhood, house by house, street by street.
Dr. Aldada, I understand you have family in Gaza. What have they been experiencing? What has their day-to-day life been like?
Well, what I bring to this program, I have no political affiliation. I don't belong to a single organization. But what I wanted to bring to this program is a voice of the people of Gaza, a voice of persecution that has been taking place for many decades. This did not happen October 7th. The Gaza Strip has been under siege. I was born in Shifa Hospital. I'm unable to visit the Gaza Strip, not allowed entry into my ancestral homeland. And this is because of the occupation, plain and simple. What we hear from my family that is still on the ground is utter destruction to every facet of life. When a hospital is being destroyed under false pretenses, when schools are bombed out under, once again, false pretenses, where's the humanity in this world? Where's the humanity watching this, and I'm sorry, I will use that word, this genocide taking place? And not a lot of voices are telling us to stop. Stop this insanity. Every single uncle, every single cousin of mine had their homes destroyed. Every single person that stayed in the Gaza Strip is currently homeless. We lost many members, and I could assure you, none of them have any political affiliation, just ordinary citizens. These are the real victims of this war. It is a sad reality that this is unfolding in front of us, live streamed in front of us, and nothing can be done about it, and it cannot be stopped. It is beyond devastating, beyond heartbreaking, as an outsider watching this. And it continues.
Representative Rashid, I understand, if I remember correctly, your family's in the West Bank. What have you heard from them? How are they doing?
The situation in the West Bank is extremely tense and violent there as well. Of course, does not compare to what's happening in Gaza. The situation in Gaza completely eclipses anything that's happening anywhere else in the region. But in the West Bank, people are constantly afraid of settler attacks. They're constantly attacked by the Israeli military. Last year, the olive harvest season was completely lost in my village, and in, I know dozens of villages throughout the West Bank where people were not able to tend to their crops at all. And hundreds of Palestinians have been killed just in recent weeks. In Tul Karim, a city in the West Bank, the refugee camp there an Israeli airstrike killed over 20 people. So it's a devastating reality in the West Bank as well. But I want to say, you know, the doctor who just spoke before me, thank you for calling it a genocide, and you don't need to apologize for that. The South Africa briefing, genocide case at the International Court of Justice is an 84-page, thorough, outline of exactly what Israel is doing, and has page after page after page of statements of genocidal intent from Israel's leaders. They are not hiding it. They have not been hiding it. And not only since October 7, but also before October 7, their desire to erase Palestinians from Gaza and to starve them and to not allow food and fuel and electricity. This was policy that was stated at the very beginning, right after October 7, but you can go back years and a decade plus to statements from other Israeli leaders saying we want to put the people in Gaza on a diet. I think we need to treat this with the gravity that it deserves. We're witnessing this genocide unfold firsthand with American taxpayer dollars. A recent report by a university estimated that over $22 billion over the last year alone has been sent to Israel, while Americans are in the southeast are facing Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton, and FEMA saying that we're running out of funds. Yet we managed to find $22 billion in 1 year alone to support the Israeli military. Something's very wrong with this picture.
Dr. Ahmad, your time with us is limited this morning, so I do want to ask you, you were at the White House in April when President Biden was hosting a meeting with Muslim leaders and administrative officials. You spoke, you handed him a letter from an 8-year-old orphan in Gaza and walked out on the president. Take us back, and I should say we need to take a break in 2 minutes, but take us back to that moment and what you were thinking.
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of what we've all been talking about is that we found that there has been no will to bring an end to what we're seeing here. And I felt at that time, as the White House is trying to gear up for a re-election campaign, specifically the Biden administration, that they knew that the Muslim American community, the Arab American community, the Palestinian American diaspora in the United States was very frustrated, was heartbroken, and was grieving at what was taking place in Gaza. This is at a time when the famine really started to erupt in a very serious way in terms of the public health implications. And I felt that it was not serious, and everything suggested that that was the case, because the week of this dinner was the week that the World Central Kitchen convoy was attacked, killing 7 people, was the week that a fighter jet sale of more than $18 billion went through, and a week that the State Department quietly tried to transfer more ammunition, tanks and artillery shells to the Israeli military. So it was clear that this was not going to be some sort of meeting where you can engage in a serious discussion, talk about the policy, talk about the humanitarian crisis. It felt more like it was going to be a commercial for the re-election campaign. And I was, and just like everybody else who's on this call, as well as every single humanitarian organization at that time, we were very terrified, and we were screaming at the top of our lungs to avoid a full-fledged invasion of Rafah, because 1.8 million Palestinians were displaced there. And we knew that the Israeli military, if they got in there, it would be an absolute bloodbath. Unfortunately, none of our warnings were heeded, and the Israeli military ultimately went through Rafah, and they did what they've done to the rest of the Gaza Strip, as you've heard.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to have to continue this conversation in a moment. We need to take a break. This is the 21st show. We'll continue our conversation with Palestinian Illinoisans in a moment. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our series of conversations on the 1 year since the latest chapter in the long war between Israel and Hamas began. And we are talking with three Palestinian Illinoisans. Dr. Ash Aldada of Champaign-Urbana is with us. He's a cardiologist, but here on his own capacity today. Also, Dr. Thayer Ahmad, a physician, emergency medicine specialist based in Chicago. He spent 3 weeks volunteering at a hospital in the Gaza Strip earlier this year. And State Representative Abdul Nasser Rashid is with us. He's a Democrat from the town of Justice, Illinois, and is the first Palestinian-American elected to the Illinois General Assembly. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. Dr. Ahmad, I know your time is limited with us this morning. There's so much I want to get to. I do want to ask you a question that I hope to ask our other guests later. What is your hope for the future, if any, at this point? How would you like to see the current chapter resolved and the ultimate outcome for both Israelis and Palestinians living in the area?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question to answer, especially with every single day the situation in Gaza deteriorating further and further. It's tough to sort of try to put into words, all of the devastation and the loss. And, what I'm, and I think everybody else is calling for first and foremost, is some sort of accountability, is some sort of reckoning about what's taken place over more than 365 days, and really making sure that we take a long, hard look at ourselves as Americans and as an international community about how we failed the people of Gaza. I mean, I think there's probably, a few things that I would mention that we need to resolve in the interim for any sort of stability in the region. And first and foremost, there needs to be a recognition that there has been the dehumanization of Palestinian people in a very insidious way over decades and decades that have allowed something like what's happened in Gaza to take place. Just yesterday, at one of the hospitals that I went to when I was there, Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Gaza, in the courtyard of that hospital, a missile hit the tents that were there for people who were displaced. And literally people were burned alive. And these videos haunted us. I'm sure every single person on this call saw those videos yesterday in the evening and had to live with those images. And the problem was that wasn't the first time we've seen images like that over the last 365 days. We want accountability for who did that to those people. We want all of the Western values that we've heard people talk about, all of the principles, all of the institutions that are supposed to uphold international humanitarian law. We want that to be the real deal. We want people to be held accountable in a way that prevents something like this from ever happening again. That is a way that we can make sure that Palestinians, who are just like anybody else in the world, who have dreams and aspirations and strive for, the self-determination and to have their own state, they need to make sure that their voices are heard through accountability measures. It starts in this country. It starts all the way at the top in terms of our administration being able to hold Israel accountable. It starts from the international community. There needs to be accountability. And, you know, we talked about the International Court of Justice. We know about ICC. But everybody needs to think about, what are the ways that we've allowed this to happen? Is it the way that the narrative was shaped about Palestinians? The fact that, you know, we can say 60 Palestinians were killed or 100 Palestinians were killed, and there's this image that's conjured in our minds that's subhuman. So I think that's what, for me, is what needs to happen. And I'm seeing some shift in that. I am seeing some shift. It's not come fast enough, but I'm seeing that at least among everyday Americans, that they do want a ceasefire, that they do want arms to stop being sent to propagate this war that's in place there. I've seen actors and different politicians change their stance and be able to come out and say, you know, this is horrifying what's happening to Palestinian people. And they're acknowledging that, you know, these people, there is this effort not just to sort of dehumanize them, but there's this real effort right now in Gaza to depopulate the area as what's happening in the north. So that's, to me, that's what I think needs to happen. I hope that that's something we can all rise to the occasion and stand up for what's right in this situation, and that all of the rules of law, all of the values, all of the moral sort of principles that we maintain, that it doesn't stop at the borders of Gaza, and that we're able to make sure that that's something that we can all be a part of.
Dr. Thayer Ahmad, I know you need to go. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we continue our conversation with State Representative Abdel Nasser Rashid, Democrat from Bridgeview, Illinois. I think I said the wrong town a little earlier. My apologies for that. And Dr. Ash Eldada of Champaign, Urbana. Dr. Eldada, I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier, and that is this use of the word genocide. And I'm going to say, we're not here to litigate that today. That's for international, tribunals to handle. I just want to ask you, and I'm going to read here from the UN definition. It talks about the physical element is required to prove this: killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of a group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And then there's also the mental element, which is the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such. That's the legal definition. I want to ask you personally, why is it important for you to characterize it using that word that we know is become one of the more divisive sort of rhetorical points in the way people talk about this?
I think what Dr. Ahmed was saying a little bit ago, with respect to justice, I would love for all members of the Middle East to be treated on an equal footing. I would love for all the morals and Western values to be applied to the whole of the Middle East, to the whole world, not just the Middle East. For me, it really feels those morals and the moral compass stops, like Dr. Ahmed said, stops at the border of Gaza, that the media, politicians are always shy of calling it for what it is. What you just read as the legal definition of genocide is actually what is taking place. But we feel this resistance to call it for what it is. If it was applied anywhere else, the same level of destruction, same level of violence anywhere else in the world, it will be called genocide. But for some reason, a lot of the morals and a lot of the principles are stopped at the border of the Gaza Strip, West Bank, and currently Lebanon as well. So that's why I think it's important to call it for what it is.
State Representative Rashid, you work with legislators in your own party, in your own caucus, who I'm sure have a very different view of these questions. How do you find people respond to that when you talk about these things?
I've been very humbled by the level of support that I've received from lawmakers and other elected officials in Illinois and across the country. I'm gonna talk about that in a moment. I wanna go back to your question about genocide and
that's related.
Pulled up the PDF of South Africa's genocide case, and keep in mind when we say South Africa is the country that is bringing this case against Israel in the International Court of Justice, this is the same country that fought apartheid. This is a country that understands what oppression looks like and came out from under it that we all know what that history looks like. And, you know, the Prime Minister of Israel compared on November 3rd, 2023, Palestinians to the biblical people of the Amalek. And he compared them to the Amalek in a letter that he wrote to Israeli soldiers. And the biblical passage reads, "Now go attack Amalek and prescribe all that belongs to him. Spare no one, but kill all alike, men and women, infants and sucklings, oxen and sheep, camels and asses." So that's the biblical passage that says, spare nobody, kill everyone, men, women, and infants. That was a biblical reference that the Prime Minister of Israel used. The Minister of Defense said that they are imposing a complete siege on Gaza. No electricity, no food, no water, no fuel. He said this on October 9th. The Minister of National Security, Ben-Gavir, says, to be clear, when we say that Hamas should be destroyed, it also means those who celebrate, those who support, those who hand out candy, they're all terrorists. They all should be destroyed. The Minister of Energy and Infrastructure, I can go on and on and on. I encourage anyone who's listening, just Google South Africa Israel genocide case and go start reading on page 60. And you will see exactly how the Israeli leaders publicly said exactly what they will do, and they have done it. They have committed genocide. That's a good segue to the response I've gotten. You know, it was really, really hard right after October 7 because people, of course, were, you know, everyone was reeling from what happened on October 7. And we, those of us who've known Israel's intent and exactly what they want to do, were worried about what would come and them using the attacks on October 7 as an excuse to commit genocide. So at first, of course, it was very difficult. But even then, on October 8th, I had 18 legislators, myself included, sign a statement calling for de-escalation. And another 20 plus legislators, Illinois legislators, have signed a statement by Jewish Voice for Peace, led by my colleague, Representative Lillian Jimenez. And then there are dozens and dozens of other elected officials and state representatives and senators across the country who are speaking up, not to mention, of course, members of Congress, where a lot of work still needs to be done. It is quite disappointing, the level of inaction and the level of support for Israel in the halls of Congress. But even there, you're seeing unprecedented levels of support for Palestinians compared to what we've seen in the past. Even former Speaker Pelosi and Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky signed a letter with dozens of other legislators, members of Congress, calling to restrict arms to Israel. So I am seeing, where many of us are holding multiple feelings at the same time, frustration and anger and trauma at what we're seeing unfold before our eyes. I absolutely saw those videos that Dr. Ahmed mentioned of people burning alive in those tents at Nasser Hospital or Al-Aqsa Hospital. And I see a sea change in American politics that's on its way. It's not happening fast enough. It is frustratingly slow, but it is happening. And that change is going to come when we turn the politics of this country around and stop supporting this genocide, and then fundamentally turn toward a politics that prioritizes human rights. I do believe that's coming, and that's what gives me hope to continue doing this work for the future.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're focusing the hour today on the perspective of Palestinian Americans as they reckon with the events of the past year in the war between Israel and Hamas and the effects that's had on people in the Gaza Strip. We've been speaking with State Representative Abdel Nasser Rashid, Dr. Ash Eldada of Champaign-Urbana, and we have two more voices we're bringing into the conversation. They are, in their words, spiritual advisors for the group Peoria for Palestine. The group's president, Imam Mazhar Mahmoud, and Sheikh Osama Al-Rifai. Sheikh Al-Rifai has family ties to Palestine. Imam Mahmoud has been a leading voice in protests on behalf of Palestinians in central Illinois. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for waiting and joining us today on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Sheikh Al-Rifai, I want to ask you, how is your family in Palestine when you hear from them? What have you heard from them?
To be honest with you, I can't hear from any one of them right now. The only person that I have right now somewhat of a connection is because he's out of the country and he's conveying to me what they are going through. I myself have absolutely no communication that is happening with them. The situation is very devastating, and I would like to add about what happened last night in Al-Aqsa Hospital. I did not sleep last night. It was a night full of nightmares. I woke up my kids from my screaming in the night due to the brutal scenes that I have seen. A little girl caught in the fire, raising her hand, going towards her father, who was unable to help her because he was also on fire. That's, you know, it's a very devastating emotional feeling right now that I have.
Imam Mazhar, I want to ask you about the reaction that you've seen from people in Peoria. What have you heard? What have you thought? You know, we can mention here, the Pew Research put out a poll in April. It found that adults under 30 were substantially more likely to sympathize with the Palestinian people than with Israelis. Maybe you can talk about why that is and what reaction you've seen to Peoria for Palestine.
Well, thank you. So to begin with, the efforts locally here are perpetual, they're continuous. And I believe it's the opposite from that. Everybody I've interacted from elders to youngsters to Gen Z or individuals who are perhaps not even in tune with politics, they are most definitely sympathizing with what's happening in Palestine. Because to be honest, it is not a military or a militant faction that is being targeted. It is, you know, kids who are being targeted. And some of my colleagues here, they used the term indiscriminately being bombed or killed. I would actually argue the opposite. I would say discriminately being bombed and killed. We've been speaking about Gaza for so very long in this 1 hour or so, but we need to understand, and the American population needs to understand, that we are not only supporting what has been called a genocide in Gaza, rather there are similar episodes and glimpses coming from Lebanon and Syria and Yemen and elsewhere, and that is all being funded and fueled with the American taxpayer dollar. So American taxpayers dollar. So this is something that we need to introspect on. And once again, like I've mentioned before, the local efforts are continuous, and we've seen individuals who were silent starting to speak up.
And we need to take a break on the program. We will continue this conversation in a moment. We are speaking with Palestinian Illinoisans reckoning with all that has happened in the past year. This is the 21st show. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. Please stay with us. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We are continuing our series of conversations on 1 year since the latest chapter in the war between Israel and Hamas that has left tens of thousands, 42,000 Palestinians dead as of the most recent figure I saw. There was just an attack, as we've been discussing this hour, last night that left people dead or wounded at a hospital complex in Gaza. My guests for our conversation today are Imam Mazar Mahmoud, who's president of Peoria for Palestine, Sheikh Osama Al-Rifai, who is a spiritual advisor to that organization, also Dr. Ash Al-Dada, who's a physician and a Palestinian American in Champaign, Urbana, and State Representative Abdel Nasser Rashid, a Democrat from Bridgeview, first Palestinian American elected to the Illinois General Assembly. And State Representative Rashid, I want to ask you about Illinois has a strong set of laws. A lot of the protest we've seen in the past year has been calling for divestment from Israel. Stop sending money, stop investing in companies, that sort of thing. The campus protests we saw. Illinois has a strong set of laws that disallow that, at least with official state money. And we've actually seen the state treasurer of Illinois investing in these Israel bonds. I may have the name of that wrong. I'm wondering, from your perspective, as somebody involved in state government, have you been having conversations about trying to rethink these laws in Illinois that are so strict in that regard? And how are you thinking about that? I'm sorry, we might have had a little technical snafu there. My question was, how are you thinking about, and is there any effort underway to sort of revisit Illinois' very strong pro-Israel, anti-BDS type laws?
Got it. I'm happy to talk about that. Are we back on?
We are. I think there was a little technical snafu on our end. So I set it up, and I don't know what you heard or didn't hear. So I'll just reset the entire question and say, sure. You know, a lot of the campus protests were calling for divestment from Israel and companies that do business with Israel. And we've seen Illinois has a very strong set of laws that date back, in some cases, 10 years, some cases longer, that bar at least state money from doing that. We've also seen the treasurer of Illinois proactively investing in Israel bonds. And I'm wondering, you know, from your perspective as somebody who is in state government, how you think about that, whether there have been any discussions or there's any effort at revisiting some of those restrictions. Take it where you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for raising that, because we do have some deeply problematic laws on our books, in particular the anti-BDS law that passed in 2015, led by former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's chief of staff. That law directed our pension system to essentially penalize companies that choose to boycott Israel. And think about that. Think about companies that are choosing to hold Israel accountable for its human rights violations getting penalized by the Illinois pension system, when France and Germany and Spain and the UK and Canada and countries, allies of the United States across the world, are calling for an arms embargo essentially against Israel. Yet in our state, our pension system is going the opposite direction of punishing those who are on the right side of history, punishing those who are trying to do the right thing, the moral thing. And as I'm sure your listeners know, it's not easy to get a law passed or rescinded. It's something that takes time, and it's something I'm certainly working on. Those conversations are happening. They're happening in earnest with my colleagues in the House and in the Senate, and they will continue happening. I don't have a timeline on when something will pass, but it's something that needs to happen. And specific, and you know, turning briefly to the question of the Israel bonds, another massive mistake by our state treasurer, who decided to put Illinois taxpayer money in Israeli bonds when we needed to be holding Israel accountable for its gross human rights violations. And we've seen the Israeli economy tank, and we've seen the Israeli bonds produce a smaller return on investment. So now we are also talking about potentially problematic investment decisions by our state treasurer's office. So these are things that require further conversation. And I encourage listeners who are interested in helping with this to contact your state representatives and your state senators and let them know that you do not want Illinois being part of the problem when it comes to what is happening to the Palestinian people in Gaza today. And as another guest said, to the people of Lebanon and other parts of the Middle East as well.
Sheikh El Rifai, can you talk about Peoria for Palestine? What sort of demands requests have you made of local government in Peoria, and how receptive have officials been to that?
Imam Mazhar will be able to speak better than me as
sure.
he has
All
been
right.
attending those meetings. However, I would like to just mention one thing that we've been calling for from the beginning until now, one thing and only one thing. We've been calling for a ceasefire. And that's what we've been asking our government officials locally in Peoria. And they have not been responding the way that we want them to respond. All of what we are asking them is at least show that you are on the right side against the injustice that is happening to the people of Gaza. It is one simple request: stop the genocide. After that, we're going to be talking about the accountability, and we need to talk about the dehumanization of the Palestinian people. And I would still feel it is not a war between Israel and Hamas, because the ones who are suffering most are the Palestinian people. The fire that happened last night in Al-Aqsa Hospital, I did not see a single Hamas person in there. It is so easy for me to just say Hamas was hiding there. Whereas the truth of the matter is, what I can see with my own eyes, I see innocent children, mothers, and parents burning to death. So what we're looking for right now, one thing and only one thing right now: call for a ceasefire. We can do it if we have the will to do it. But Imam Mazhar can shed more light about what is happening for the efforts here locally in Peoria.
Imam Mazhar, go ahead, please.
So Sheikh Osama and I, along with the rest of the group Peoria for Palestine, have approached the situation from a very humanitarian, very human perspective. I'll give you one example. We had, regrettably, a demise, death of an infant in our community. We, as men of faith, we try to once again talk to the emotions and the intellect of people through these human situations that occur amidst us, even whilst bringing these very human, painful glimpses in front of City Hall and saying things like, we cannot handle and bear a single funeral of a single baby, a single infant in our community. How do we, as leaders, how do you, representing your constituents, how do you have the ability to sleep at night when there are at times hundreds and thousands of funerals per day in Gaza and now in Lebanon and other places of children who are the main, hunted by these discriminate bombings? They are the main people who are suffering in this genocide. So even with these situations, even with perhaps bringing light through social events, it's at times very difficult to knock on the eardrums of our politicians, regrettably, who are at times voted in through our efforts and through our votes. So it's definitely been a very tough ride.
I want to take a call, 800-222-9455. Dory is calling from DeKalb on line one. Dory, thank you for calling in.
Hi, thank you so much for your program. I'm a 75-year-old grandmother. I'm Jewish on both sides of my family. And Jews have suffered over the years at the hands of many monsters systematically exterminating us. And when we are systematically exterminating Palestinian mothers and children, we have become the monsters. I have raised my children, my husband's religion, Quaker, over the years because of our treatment of the Palestinian people. I suffer from the horrors that we are doing, the monstrosities that our country and Israel are doing to human beings, mothers and children. Please don't feel that all Jews are wishing monstrosities and genocides. We are not. There is a monster in Israel, and in our country, there's a monster that is doing this. So please, please don't feel that all Jews are wishing horrors and death on mothers and children. Thank you so much. Thank you for your beautiful program. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Dori. We appreciate it. We are coming to the end of our time together. Dr. Eldada, I want to ask you, last week on the program, I spoke with two Israeli students at the U of I, and I asked them what their hopes for the future were. And one of them said he hoped the Palestinians would have rights, sovereignty, land, and the Israelis would have peace. As you think about Palestine, Israel, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years in the future, what are your hopes?
This whole conflict started in 1948, to be exact. This didn't happen October 7th. And it was the tragedy of the eviction of Palestinians from what used to be called all of Palestine. The state of Israel was created with 27% of the land being the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, and expectations was, this is it. Fast forward with all the conflicts, the Palestinian people have the resolve that this is it, Gaza Strip and West Bank is all we want for a Palestinian state. The voices that I hear from my family from the Gaza Strip is, we want independence, we want freedom, we want self-determination. They don't want bombs landing on them. Ceasefire is what we're asking for. Living freely on what used to be 27% of what used to be all of Palestine. It's a very simple compromise. Both people can live side by side. They don't have to live happily together. After this genocide, it's hard to come back from that trauma. It's hard to heal from that trauma. People just want peace. That's it. Enough of the wars.
And State Representative Rashid, just about a minute left. What is your hope for the future?
I similarly hope and wish for a peace and equality, so that everybody there has the same rights, regardless of their race or their ethnicity or their religion, where we don't have a system of racial superiority and apartheid system as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have called it, where Palestinians and Israelis can have the same rights. And I want to say to Dori, who called in, thank you so much for your heartfelt message. And I've been so honored to work with many Jewish leaders, including some of my colleagues who have been fighting for Palestinian rights, and groups like Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now, who've been doing such amazing work to bring an end to the injustice. So thank you for your words. And please know that I know there's so many Jews out there who are fighting against what Israel's doing and our country's support for it.
State Representative Abdel Nasser Rashid, Democrat from Bridgeview, Illinois, the first Palestinian American elected to the General Assembly. Dr. Ash Eldada is a physician in Champaign, Urbana. We've also been speaking with Imam Mazar Mahmoud, president of Peoria for Palestine, and Sheikh Osama Al-Rifai, spiritual advisor to Peoria for Palestine. Thank you also to Dr. Thayer Ahmed, who joined us for the first half of our program today. He's a Chicago physician who traveled to Gaza earlier this year. This is part of a series of conversations we have had on this subject. There will be more if you want to hear the first one. A pair of Israeli students that aired last week. You can find that on our website at 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.